Hello and welcome to a special episode of We the People. It has been a whole year since the first case of COVID-19 was detected in India, and for the first time in months, we have the people back on We the People. The pandemic has tested all of us, and of course we've had to adjust, and so our audience today, they join us virtually due to the restrictions on social and physical engagement that we also want to maintain, both for your safety and for ours. So thank you all for joining us and welcome back. Now, talking about testing times, this has been a year of everyone having to contend with perhaps our greatest fear, uncertainty. How to keep ourselves safe, how to keep our loved ones safe, how to hold on to our jobs while doing so. And this makes for a perfect storm. And all of this has led to a rise in mental health issues. This week, a horrifically tragic story was reported from Hyderabad, where two young women with promising lives ahead of them were found dead in their home. They'd been bludgeoned by their mother. In the investigation, psychoanalysts say that there may have been some underlying psychological issues that had exacerbated during the period of the lockdown when the family was cut off from the outside world. But what is obvious is that there's gross ignorance and complete neglect of mental health issues here. And that leads us to ask, are we sitting on a ticking time bomb? And do we have mental health help available on hand for a country of our size when this pandemic ends? Joining us on the show tonight, we have Milind Deora, former minister and Congress leader, Radhika Gupta, MD and CEO of Edelweiss Asset Management Limited, Amita Devnani, child and parenting consultant and mental health counselor, Amrita Tripathi, founder editor of The Health Collective, co-author of Real Stories of Dealing with Depression, and Dr. Nimish Desai, professor of psychiatry and the director of the Institute of Human Behavior and Allied Sciences. Dr. Desai, I first want to set up this discussion. Are we facing a mental health pandemic? Because, you know, unlike other illnesses, depression and other mental health struggles can be invisible. So are there studies that show the numbers of cases of mental health issues are on the rise? Is that what you've seen in your practice?
Sure. There is data internationally and within the country for rise in not only psychiatric problems, but also in psychological distress and the stress symptoms. And so the relevance for stress and the anxiety that you referred to, both for physical and mental health and the overall well-being, is very crucial. Let's also not forget that as compared to 2020, the 2021 is going to see much more of the effect of the economic slowdown, if that continues. The effect on mental health of the economic slowdown is actually something that we're beginning to see now. And so this is the time to start focusing on mental health much more than we have done in the past. We shouldn't be missing this opportunity.
Amrita Tripathi, the Health Collective, doctor here says that we shouldn't miss the bus, but really, when did this whole journey start? The Health Collective aims to be a safe platform for those with mental health issues to reach out. Why did you feel the need to set up such a space, and how has it done in the past year?
Thanks, Sarah, for that. So I set the site up about 4.5 years ago now, you know, building on my background as a reporter. I used to be a health editor at a news channel, and we really struggled to get stories about mental health, you know, on the air with any regular kind of cadence. I think what struck me at that time was that there was still very little awareness of where people could reach out for help. And I was actually really moved by someone sending out a message, you know, on a social media platform that a friend of theirs was, you know, very, very distressed and they didn't know where to reach out for help. And there are all of these helplines, you know, that most of us think people have access to. When I set up the site, I thought that least we could do is put these resources together so people can have credible information. And it sort of grew through word of mouth. People started sharing their stories of lived experience. And that's really become the kind of center, the fulcrum of what we do, is to share what it's actually like to live with a mental health disorder or to go through something like that in a country like India, where, you know, it's still very difficult to talk about. So the conversations have been building. I think in the last year, we saw certainly a surge in search for terms like anxiety and even for the helplines that I just mentioned.
So you've seen that in the last year. It's important for people to speak up, says Amrita. Joining us now, Milind Deora, is someone who has done so. He's a former minister, a Congress leader. Milind Deora, you've spoken about your struggles openly, about your struggles with mental health. Mental health problems have already been a major contributor to the burden of illness in India. Before the pandemic, India was already called the suicide capital of the world. Now, given the anxieties during the pandemic and how they've grown, should this problem be taken more seriously this year? Dr. Desai says so.
I think mental health is a problem which needs to be taken very seriously, whether there is or isn't a pandemic around. A pandemic of this nature has certainly exacerbated the problem globally. And I think that it's important to make people aware of the fact that or to destigmatize mental health, because in different cultures, different societies, especially in a society like ours in India, where people feel a sense of stigma associated with admitting to having a mental health issue. And it's important for people to realize that your brain is no different from any other organ in your body. In fact, the brain is an organ. So just like you get a bug in your stomach and you go to a doctor, he prescribes you medicine, you change your diet perhaps, and that improves things permanently. The brain is exactly the same. It's just that our consciousness is associated with the brain. And not to sound too philosophical, but what that does is that places much greater emphasis on the brain than it does on any other organ. But ultimately, when you tell yourself that the brain is an organ, just like my liver or my kidney or my stomach, then you begin to see it as what it is, which is a biological organ, which falls ill sometimes and it needs to be addressed. It needs to be fixed. And the good thing is that with science, there are so many practices available to prevent mental health disorders and not just address them when they, when people face them. So I think prevention is much more important than cure and care. And the good news is that there are many prevention techniques which help people.
So you talk about breaking the stigma. Is that why you spoke out about your mental health struggles?
No, I didn't really speak out because of that. My speaking out happened actually by accident, and I never planned it. When I heard about the young actor who passed away, unfortunately, recently and during COVID, and and when Sushant Singh Rajput's suicide obviously got very politicized, and there was all kinds of conspiracy theories being floated about, something triggered it off in me, and I felt it's a good idea to share some anecdotes that I have of how to fight this and how to combat this. And that if it helps reassure people that, even a politician can have it, even a businessman can have it, even a celebrity can have it, even an actor can have it, even a journalist could have it, there's nothing wrong in it. I think in the early days, the first time I experienced something like this when I was about 18 years old, I did sense a lot of stigma. I didn't know who to talk to. I was fortunate enough to have a very supportive family and friend circle who did sort of talk to me about it. And although they didn't know much about it, and mental health was in its early stages of infancy, I did receive a lot of help and support from close friends and family. But I didn't really do it to destigmatize it. It happened by accident that I spoke out. If it has helped people and it gives people solace and the reassurance that, anyone can have it, no matter whether you're famous or unknown or rich or poor or, a politician or a student, I'm glad it could be of help.
Or if you're super successful, like Radhika Gupta, who's the MD and CEO of Edelweiss Assets Management, joins us today. Radhika, you are a CEO that's, featured in all shows and papers, making headlines all the time. But at one point, you had even considered suicide. I don't need to tiptoe around this with you, Radhika, because you've spoken openly about this many times. You've said that it was sparked off by an inability to accept rejection then. This is probably you, your 20-year-old self. But, Radhika, this whole year has been tumultuous for so many people, right? For whom their well-laid-out plans based on hard work may have been thrown out of the window for no fault of theirs. Students getting into their dream school, dream college, finding themselves unable to go. Teachers, after 30 years of experience, finding themselves having to relearn their trade. People who have worked their way up the corporate ladder in an industry now find that industry only is irrelevant. So we want to hear from you as someone who's been there.
believe, Sarah, our system doesn't prepare you for rejection. You're taught all your life, work hard, do well. But what if you work hard and do well and things don't work out? What if you get rejected? What if you don't get the job you want on campus? What if you get laid off from the job that you desired? What if you get rejected by a boy or girl? All of these things are something our system doesn't prepare you for. When I decided to speak out about the story, I didn't do it for anybody else. I quite frankly did it to free myself. And I think that has been the biggest gift. When I accepted the fact that I can have problems, even if I went to Wharton or if I was a class topper, it doesn't matter who I was. I'm entitled to have problems. I'm entitled to have low days. I'm entitled to feel bad about rejection. And when I spoke about it, I embraced my own weaknesses and vulnerabilities. And, you know, rather than people judging me for it, we always feel that when this stuff happens to us, when you lose your job, when you go through something like this, the world will judge you negatively. It's been 2 years since I spoke out. Every day I get letters from men and women in the country and around the world, actually, telling me their own stories of imperfections, challenges, and how they connected to that story, and perhaps it gave them a little bit of hope. I think COVID has been, Sarah, an exceptional year. I think whether it's a student who couldn't go to the college placement in the U.S., many friends, even at the CEO level, who are dealing with turbulence in their jobs, maybe losing their jobs, even elderly people whose simple routine has been disrupted because they couldn't take a walk in the park. All of us have dealt with our own challenges of mental health. I would only say one thing. Talk about it. Find a circle that is secure that you can do, that you can talk to openly. I've done that for the last 3-4 years, and I can tell you it has been transformative.
Talk about it. That's important. But of course, in a COVID year, in a pandemic year, sometimes even that becomes difficult. What if you're told you can't catch up with a friend, go get a coffee somewhere, you have to be alone in isolation? But I want to bring in some audience, our audience here. We have them back on the show after many, many months. They have questions for you. S. Shruti, college student from CTTE in Chennai. Shruti, could you unmute yourself? And what's your question? And then Manasa, who's from the Anna University. You too.
Okay. Good evening. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Yes. So my question is, so issues like overthinking has already been common among youngsters, and particularly youngsters during the COVID times, especially the final year students and the graduates of 2020 and 2021. We had a lot of confusions in our career decisions because those who planned for placements didn't get good offers because placement openings were very few because of COVID. And those who were planning for higher studies for in abroad, they could also not very well execute their idea. So due to this, that is a significant increase in the anxiety level among youngsters, students especially, and issues like overthinking has been too much. So what can be a good solution for this? Because this is in turn affecting the mental health of youngsters, young students especially. So I really want to know if at all if there's a ideal solution for this.
Radhika, let me just try and get Manasa also. Manasa, unmute yourself. Do we have Manasa? Oh, all right. Radhika, we'll try and get Manasa up. But Radhika, can you respond to Shruti about anxiety levels amongst the youth? And I think for them, they just feel, you know, the whole world is ahead of them. They had so much to reach out for, and then suddenly there's so much uncertainty in their lives.
So I would say two things to you, Shruti, and to many people in your place. One is that, you know, you are graduating in the middle of a slowdown, and realize you're not the only one in this situation. And when we are students and young professionals, some of us will graduate in downturns. I happened to graduate in 2005, which was a boom. But I have many close friends. Incidentally, my business partner graduated in 2008 in the U.S., where it was very, very difficult to find a job. Realize that that happens to a set of people. But while the starting looks difficult, did it change his business trajectory? No. He became a very, very successful entrepreneur, runs a business, and many like him have. We all have phases of bumpy roads in our life. For some people, it starts at the beginning of their career. For some people, it happens in the middle of their career. So I think that's one thing you have to realize. The second thing I would say is that, you know, it is important to see how you approach this. One approach, and it's easy to say, is to get anxious and worry about the future, which is something that you really can't control. It's not in your hand. The second is to use that time productively. While you're waiting to go to a college, while you're waiting to be placed into a job that you can't find right now, see if you can up your skills, see if you can start writing, see if you can be more productive. Use that time in a productive way. And thankfully, the world is a digital university out there. You don't have to stop learning and being productive in that time, because an idle mind also leads to a lot of the anxiety that you're feeling.
All right, talking about solutions, let's get in Amita Devnani here. Amita, there's so much anxiety, the stress of having to make so many decisions with so much to lose if you misstep, right? This makes for a perfect storm. There are weighty responsibilities from our parents to our spouses, our jobs, and all of this has led to a rise in mental health. What are the coping mechanisms? What we have so many of our viewers listening in. What coping mechanisms would you recommend?
So if you talk about the coping mechanism, I would say that first we will have to see that we will have to do it in a two levels. Like first in a short-term level, like for mindful techniques are there, meditation techniques are there, with which help you can cope with the situation. And the second one is doing your work on the thought level, because it is the thought basically which creates anxiety in you mostly. So going into the, like, you must have some dogmatic beliefs, some strong beliefs inside you, like we should get success at any cost, or like there are some thoughts inside people like we are not good enough. And these kinds of thoughts actually create anxiety in the situation. So working on the thought level, and then the short-term techniques like mindful techniques, and giving yourself like gratitude, showing gratitude towards everyone. Like these are all the small techniques which can work for the coping strategies for such situations.
All right. Let's try and get in more students. Soundarya from Chennai. Soundarya, unmute yourself.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay. My question is actually related to the recent murder incident that happened in Andhra Pradesh. You know, in all the reports that I have so far read, they have particularly mentioned that the parents are so well educated and they are working in well-reputed institutions. My question is that it's not a question. I'm like afraid of the fact of many students who are actually studying under these kind of teachers who's actually having this mental health issue and who blindly believe in all these superstitious and illusionary activities. So they might easily get misbehaved or misguided in so many ways, right? Mm-hmm. Because since the students blindly believe whatever the teachers say, I mean, now we are living in urban, we are having so many sources such as Google and YouTube and so many things. But say a girl from a remote area, she might not be in the social media life. So she just blindly believes whatever the teacher says. So, I mean, in so many ways, the students can get misguided because of this kind of teachers. So what role can be the solution for this? And in addition to that, I would like to also ask, you know, if a child is having any serious issue, the only person she can discuss or trust is her parents. Correct. If her parents are having these kind of superstitious beliefs, then there is a need for a third person to interfere into her matters and also give her a proper solution. In India, we are all having this helpline and toll-free numbers, but it is not that much active because nobody trusts an unknown person. And because of that, people get misguided and they end up in committing suicide in so many ways. So what role can be the ideal solution for
Amrita
all these
Tripathi,
things?
Is that something that has been a challenge for you? Two very important points, I think, Soundarya has raised over here. One, the trust factor, right? Someone reaches out to you. Why should they trust a complete stranger? And how do you overcome that first barrier where it's the parents? In this case, what we saw in Andhra Pradesh, these two young girls who were murdered, it was, it was at the hands of their own parents.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really complicated issue, and it goes to the heart of some of the issues we do have. I think, you know, what the student has raised is very valid. Superstition is, you know, there are a lot of people who would still, the first recourse would not actually be, say, taking someone to a psychologist, a therapist or a psychiatrist, but would be to take someone to, say, a faith healer or believe that there's some sort of superstition. I don't want to get into this case specifically because I don't know the details too well. But I think, you know, what you're asking about how people can open up, what I've seen is that actually online communities like ours, even though we've transitioned a little bit into the sort of offline space, there are many online communities where people feel more comfortable, in fact. Mm. I've seen messages and tweets and stories being shared, you know, where folks feel that they can't talk to the person in the next room. And this may or may not be exacerbated by the pandemic, where everyone's kind of forced to stay together. But it's not always the case that you can count on, unfortunately, your loved ones. It is often the case, though, that you can reach out, especially now that we have, you know, the sort of digital kind of world at our fingertips. You can find communities online. I've seen some great communities, you know, led by teenagers, for example, for other adolescents. And there's a lot of real talk there. So, Sarah, I think sometimes we're kind of tempted to gloss things over as adults and say, well, you know, things are going to be fine. Don't worry about it. But, you know, we're going through this, you know, terrible pandemic. There's a lot of psychological distress among adolescents. And one point, whenever you have sort of these high profile cases of death by suicide, we've seen time and again that there are spikes in copycat suicides, which is why it's so responsible for media organizations like yourselves to share helplines, share that help is available. That can potentially save lives. And I do think what you said earlier, it is about having conversations and making that space for people to move together. But if we don't see these changes in our communities, then it's just more talking to the, you know, preaching to the choir.
Sure. And the new, you know, factor in this whole equation, the use of technology. Let's get in. Nimish Desai has a question. Nimish, unmute yourself. Quick question, please. Nimish? Well, Nimish Desai, I have his question here, so I'm just going to ask it for you, Nimish. Dr. Desai, could you respond to this? Amrita talked about, you know, the use of technology, but Nimish says that that's more in urban areas than rural areas, and according to Nimish, that's what actually makes people in urban areas more depressed and antisocial. So what is the solution for this? So basically, a little bit about the, you know, technology being a double-edged sword in this pandemic year going forward.
Sure, that's true. Digital divide does exist, much as we are trying to bridge it. There is a digital divide, and so there is that issue of the rural or the semi-urban young people not getting across. But there, the advantage still is the local community. And so, Sarah, my major point is speak up, speak out, share, reach out. Those are the things that we need to do when there is any indication of a mental health issue. I think we all must empathize with Sandhya's description of how youngsters, after such incidents, actually feel pretty insecure even about mental health problems existing around them. And so, detecting mental health problems with sensitivity, getting proper help so that we prevent such incidents. And for that, the only issue is reducing stigma, sharing, speaking out.
And that's what we're hoping to do tonight. And let's also not forget the mental health of doctors and nurses. They've been at the forefront of the pandemic for nearly a year. And of course, the poor and the dispossessed, the marginalized, they bear the greatest burden of mental health problems. Would we dismiss this as a natural extension of their social and economic conditions? And of course, we talk about technology. Many of them don't even have access to the kind of help and the kind of technology we have tonight. But thank you all for joining us on this crucial issue. Tomorrow is a budget. The pandemic has exposed how ill-equipped our public health system is to deal with such issues. We'll all be looking in to see how much will be allocated to health. And is this an opportunity to transform India's mental health situation? Is this a watershed moment for all of us to understand the prevalence of mental health issues in India? Thank you all for joining us on We the People tonight.